Hey everyone, it's Natalie Setare, your makeup artist and beauty coach here. And let me tell you, you are all in for a huge treat. The one and only Eugenia Weston is our guest for this show and the next show. Yes, this is a two-part series because the interview was so full of amazing information and insights on the beauty and makeup industry that I couldn't cut any of it. I wanted you to hear it all. So we're going to be doing part one today. You'll get to hear her amazing biography. She is an Emmy-nominated makeup artist for her work in Gypsy with Bette Midler. She also is the founder and creator of Senna Cosmetics. She has won so many awards. If you're in the industry, you know who she is, hands down, and she is a true gem. And I am so excited to bring her on the show and ask her questions that I have been dying to ask and know. And I think I walked away completely inspired as an artist. And I know you will too, whether you're a makeup artist or a makeup enthusiast, you are in for a real treat. You are listening to the Be Your Own Makeup Artist podcast. I'm your host, Natalie Setare, former military officer turned professional and award-winning makeup artist and educator and author of the book, Be Your Own Makeup Artist. This podcast is for makeup enthusiasts, makeup artists, and everyone in between. I share insights about the beauty industry, invite industry experts, and try to keep the content more about makeup education and less about buying this or that. I'm so glad you're here, and I hope you enjoy this episode. I am so thrilled to have the Eugenia Weston on the show. I discovered Eugenia when I was looking for the perfect cream blush product, and I found her cream blushes that work amazing. It goes beyond makeup because blush is life, adding life to the face. And then I discovered her brow products. And this is just makeup, but when I started to learn who the brand was created by and the story of the founder, I became in love with the brand, with the products, and of course with Eugenia. And I knew I wanted to invite her on the show to talk about her story, which I'll read your bio. I couldn't include everything in it, but I'll do my best. So hi, Eugenia. Thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having me. It's great to see you and meet you and see your face in person.
So I really wanted to invite you because your story is so inspiring and for me, actually motivating to keep doing the work that I do as a makeup artist. You can tell you've poured a lot of hard work into your brand, into your business, but you also are so authentic. At least this is how I feel. You're so authentic and so real. And I feel like everybody gets to know you. And this is so rare in this beauty industry these days. I feel like there's new brands popping up every single day, every single minute with new products. And it's just really nice to find something that's real from not just the makeup level, but also the founder level.
Not too many of us left, I would say.
I know.
It's all so commercial now. It's all so big, you know, big business now.
But you have pioneered the way. And this is important for people to know that it's because of people like you, the industry is even remotely where it is now. And what I love about your brand is that it's a shameless plug for your brand. If you haven't tried it, anybody, you have to go get it. It's solid. I mean, it's good. Mm-hmm. It's not going to disappoint. So your story is such an amazing evolution as a makeup artist from a drugstore cosmetics counter girl to the very first licensed pro artist in California. Emmy nominated celebrity artist, you've built your Senna brand, you teach, you mentor to other artists, and you are an internationally noted product innovator, a true pioneer, and you have created the Forma Brow that launched a new category. You received your Emmy for Gypsy for Bette Midler's makeup.
I was nominated. I didn't get an Emmy.
Okay, nomination, big deal.
You received in 2016 the Makeup Show's prestigious Legendary Makeup Artist Leader, Educator, and Business Owner Award. And the next year, later in 2017, you received the Lifetime Achievement Award in recognition of extraordinary contributions to the beauty industry.
I'm so blessed.
And also for the listeners, I've linked the bio and everything in the show notes. So if you want to read more about Eugenia, you can. But if you can go way back when did you actually realize you were a makeup artist?
I realized it when I was around 11 years old. I just was always fascinated with beauty and faces and fashion. It was mesmerizing to me. I just started so focused on it. I was just so focused on it. That's all I did, you know, really. It took me 2 hours to get ready for school in the morning to put my makeup on. I would get sent home for wearing too much makeup because, you know, this is back in the 60s. When you went to school, you couldn't even wear pants to school. God, I sound like I am ancient. There was a lot of rules. There was a lot of rules. So you couldn't do these things. But I was so enamored with makeup and transformation and fashion and all that, that I just had to express myself that way. I really liked it a lot.
And so when you were 11, you knew that's what you wanted to be?
Well, I just liked makeup.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think at that time I even knew there were makeup artists, honestly. Right. Not at 11, in the mid-60s. I don't think I even realized it. I just liked the art of it.
Right.
I liked what it could do for a face, that you could change a face and transform it in so many ways and create an image for yourself that you would present to the world. It was something that was important to me, but I think because, you know, 11 to 13, 14, you know, you're coming into your teen years and it's such a life-changing period of acceptance too, that the makeup for me was really important to have a specific look because, you know, when you're 14, you want to be accepted. So I think that was another big reason I was so into wearing a lot of makeup. And I was really good at it when I was really young. I was very particular in how it looked, and it was very precise. It's just something I think I was born to do, honestly.
Yeah. Was there any jobs you had before you were a makeup artist?
When I was in high school, I had a friend that she always wanted to be an actress, and she actually did headshots and some plays, and I used to make her up for that. And then, of course, when there were dances and proms and all that, I would make everybody up. I never went, but I would make everybody up. But it wasn't a paid job, but I think it was the beginnings of seeing that people wanted the work that I did. They were attracted to me for doing that kind of work on them. They wanted me to do their makeup.
You're giving me goosebumps, honestly. You know, that's how it was for me. But honestly, for so long, I didn't think that there was any work in makeup. I didn't think anybody would take me seriously as a makeup artist. And when I look back now, I'm like, oh my gosh, your story, that was me. I wasn't really ever popular or anything, but makeup was always my way of, mm-hmm. I could control how I looked on the outside and how I felt. So powerful.
I felt very insecure when I did not have my makeup on. I felt so insecure. I had to have my whole look on, and I had to wear my hoop earrings. I could not leave the house without full makeup and hoop earrings. And this is when I was a teenager. And it was just the insecurity I had with myself. And I just think it's when you're a teenager, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
I wasn't that confident. I was very confident in how I did makeup, but, you know, mentally, I wasn't so confident in relationships. I mean, you're so young.
Right.
Now when I look back, I'm thinking, God, half the stuff I wish I knew, right? We all do.
Right, right. No, I mean, I think this resonates still with young people today. Mm-hmm. I think this is why they spend still so much money on makeup.
Yeah, it's more than makeup. It's more than makeup. It's a feeling. It's an experience. It's how it makes you feel. And it's so huge right now. So obviously we need that type of artifice to feel that we can present ourselves to the world, you know? It's very important. It's very psychologically important.
For sure. I really wish that there were more scientific studies on this. You've worked on people, I'm sure, who all they needed was to match their inside with their outside. And when they see that, you know what I'm talking about, that feeling when you have a client look in the mirror as if they haven't ever seen themselves like this.
I've had people cry. They can't believe it, or something triggered, you know? It's rewarding.
Yeah. And at the same time, there's always the people who, no matter what, on the outside, they don't feel good on the inside, so nothing works. And so I think you can see that because they want to look like somebody else, it's never going to work, right?
You know, my job and our job as a makeup artist to talk them through that, to really bring out their own beauty, to empower their own beauty and not want to copy. I mean, little tricks and tips and techniques are one thing, but to imitate. But now, boy, everybody wants to copy the looks. But you know what? It isn't new. It's from the beginning of cinema in the 1920s, the actors, even in the silent films like Harlow and Crawford and Marlena Dietrich, and then you get into Jean Tierney. I mean, all the beautiful actresses, people always wanted to emulate the look of actresses. Marilyn Monroe, I mean, there are idols, our beauty idols. And it's just been throughout time that people look up to them as role models for beauty. And it's just how we are as humans.
Yeah.
You know, we want to, you know, they're so beautiful. I want to look like that. I want to have that red lip. I want to have that glowing skin. You know, whatever it is, people see that and they want it.
Right. I feel like I think about the old days and I think about what it is now. And it's just, now it's just so much. A lot of times it's the same thing over and over and over. And it's just this mass produced, mass marketed, you know, look, they're not really celebrating, not always, right? This is a generalization, but sometimes it just gets, you know, I can have a client and they're going to send me what they want. And I know immediately if they're in a certain age range and they're asking for these certain things, I know exactly what I'm going to expect when they show me the inspiration image. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, let's capture your beautiful cheekbones. Let's capture your beautiful, you know, eyebrows. You know, we're not going to do this same contouring and all of this.
Well, it's our job to express to them in a very educational way, comprehensive way that, you know, it won't work on you. Let's do what works on you.
Right.
I'm really good at that. I'm really good at sitting someone down and breaking it down for them and turning them around from something I know won't look good on them.
Right.
And persuading them of what I know will look good on them, and it always works. I don't know. It's just something I'm able to do. I guess that's why I've been in this business for so long. It's so easy for me. I don't know. It's just something I think I was born with. I can read people that way.
You educate and you validate. That's exactly, you can tell, and that's what I see and everything.
Yeah. And they believe you because the way that you describe it, they go, oh yeah, you know.
Right.
Because a lot of times what they're thinking will look good on them won't necessarily. And us as artists, we have to capture that part of them that they don't see.
Right.
That's where the art comes in. There's a quote from Leonardo da Vinci that I just love where he says, "The artist's eye sees what others only get a glimpse of." I love that. You have to have a really good eye for detail to be a good makeup artist. You just have to see every flaw, the color. You have to see everything and break it down and analyze it and then go from there.
And you also said something really important, and it's also you can read people. You have to know what their insecurities are. You have to know what they're feeling. I think that is the testament of a good makeup artist. You know, anybody can do good makeup, right? I mean, really. But to do makeup really well, it's connecting the feelings of the person that's in the chair with the actual makeup and kind of bringing that, marrying the look with the feel, which is so hard to explain sometimes.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. For me, it's very deep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it doesn't really matter who you're working with, whether it's a model or an actor or your regular consumer or a bride, whatever, you still have to tap in to that personality. And then you have to be able to know how to use the medium that you're working with, whether it's film, TV, photography, everyday wear, whatever a person needs it for. Now, of course, it's Zoom meetings and the virtual content. It's always so different. And you have to always, as an artist, be evolving and learning all the different mediums and what is entailed in creating a great look for all that.
Right.
And connecting with the person then too as well.
It's not an easy job.
No, it isn't.
But it's rewarding.
It's rewarding and it's fun.
Yeah.
And it can be challenging, and those challenges are what helps you learn how to do it better.
Right. And I think this is a question that I'm sure you can give some great insight to, because you've been in the industry for so long. You know the seasonality of the work. And I'm sure as you grew in your business and as an artist, that seasonality probably didn't exist as much. But to new or, you know, aspiring makeup artists who are dealing with the slow season and then the high season and slow season and the high season, and now we're in a global pandemic where it just seems like a slow year for all around and overall, outside of, I guess, production is probably doing okay. Were there times that you wanted to give up, or how did you deal with the seasonality? Because you've transcended this time. So that means that you've gotten out of these slow seasons.
I was busy all the time. I had a reputation for doing really good makeup and being very reliable. Mm-hmm. And responsible and utilizing good etiquette wherever I worked. And that reputation just got me job after job after job. And also in Los Angeles, there was only 5 makeup artists because everything was happening in New York. So there was like 5 of us. So when production came to LA, I got called for everything. Me and these other 4 people. And the film industry was different then because there were makeup men and union people that did the film. And of course, film industry in Hollywood, I mean, that's where it was all happening. So it was like they were in that realm. I didn't do film until I met Bette Midler. So I started working in a salon and I was always busy with clients. And then I created my own makeup line. And the salon I worked in there, we were constantly busy. And we met actors, directors, producers, everybody came in. So then we met people and they liked our work. And then we got jobs. So it just like
worked.
So I don't know if it's relevant to today. Because it's like,
yeah,
there's so many makeup artists.
There are.
The only thing I can say is that you have to be really good at what you do, and you have to connect with people that you respect and hopefully you can work with. You have to test a lot still so that you understand all the mediums that you're going to be confronted with so that you're ready. You need to develop your eye with a photographer so that you understand lighting, angles, what looks great on camera, what kind of makeup photographs great on camera. And I mean, you have to have all that knowledge. And like I say, it's just, you know, doing it and then learning from your mistakes, what didn't work and what worked. That's how I did it. I mean, I wasn't great all the time. When I would do some makeups, I go, oh God, I don't like how that looks, you know, and then the next time I would do it better. Mm-hmm. Or I would, you know, remember that and I would do it better next time. I would forget about using, you know, maybe shine on one part of the face that didn't look good, or a color that didn't read good, or I needed more blush because it's photography. I needed less blush because it's film. You know, you just learn by doing it, and you have to do it all the time. But I know now it's hard because of the pandemic. This is such a very unusual, different, unprecedented time that it's hard to gear us up what we're going to be doing, because all we can really do now is wait and then do virtual, you know, film ourselves and put it out there, put our work out there, because a lot of people, a lot of makeup artists have been discovered on their Instagrams. Mm-hmm. Rihanna, she found her makeup artist. Look at Justin Bieber. All these people that are discovered. So I think right now that's the way to go. You know, you do your work and, you know, if it's great, somebody will see it. Yeah. When you do really good work, you are noticed. And there's a lot of good work out there. There's a lot of talent.
There is a lot of talent. Mm-hmm. But I think it takes a little bit more than talent at this point. I think you also have to have those networking skills. You also have to have those professional skills, showing up on time. I was at a job once and I showed up, 20 minutes early just because. Mm-hmm. 20 minutes before, I was supposed to be early to set up my kit. And they said, "You're the first makeup artist who's early on time." I was like, "Are you kidding me?"
I hate to say this, but makeup artists, manicurists, and hairdressers, they can be a little flaky. I mean, I hate to say it, but it is like a known thing in our industry. Right. And the ones that do act professional, come to work on time, don't have their cell phones out on a set every second, and want to be famous themselves,
yeah,
those are the ones that make it. Yeah. You have to have etiquette. You should interview Melissa Street from Epic.
Yeah, I would love to.
You have to, because she on set etiquette is a master at explaining it. So I think it would be great for you to have her on your podcast, because she would reveal so much information about sets. I mean, I was on sets years ago because I never wanted to do film. I never wanted to be a makeup artist for film. I just like got into it because of Miss Midler. It was not anything I even tried to pursue at all. Things for me just happened out of my love for this art. People saw it in me and they hired me for that reason. Yeah. You know, I've been very blessed and lucky in that aspect of it.
You have been blessed and lucky, but you mentioned something. You probably didn't even realize it, but you were talking about how you were working in the salon and you were really busy. And in there, you just happened to create your own makeup line, and then you continued the rest of your story. I even looked at your beautiful timeline on your website, and it shows your very first product, and it kind of shows the history of that. Mm-hmm. And wow, I mean, I'm going to link it. Everybody can go and look at it, but you were doing things that just were not being done.
Yeah, I was.
And you just decided to start your own line. And
well, I didn't decide. Somebody else decided for me.
Okay.
I was working at a very high-end hair salon. It was my first job in makeup. And after I worked at the beauty counter at a drugstore, I was hired to work in the salon by my mentor, Bobby Joy, that actually taught me how to do eyebrows. But at this salon, there was a hairdresser there named Jerry Cosenza. And she was really something. She was a fierce, talented, visionary hairdresser. And she decided to leave the salon we were at and open up her own salon. And she called me and said, "Eugenia, I would love for you to create your own makeup line and be with us at our new salon, because it's going to be the most amazing salon in the whole Southern California." And it actually was. It was unbelievable. And so my husband said, "You know what, Eugenia, we have to do this." So I never thought of creating a makeup line. I mean, she just said, and we did it. We flew to New York, looked in the yellow pages for lab manufacturers, and we found manufacturers that would create the products that were my vision of what products should be. And we went from there, and I created Senna at Cassandra 2000. And Jerry Cosenza is the founder of Sebastian International, the hair care.
The hair care, okay. I'm familiar with that.
But during the time I was with them as well, having the Senna line, I did create Truco makeup for them, and I taught all their makeup seminars, and I did all their runway work for the shows around the country. They did all the hair shows, videos, educational videos, and I did makeup seminars for their clients that had the Sebastian hair care line in their salons, in the Sebastian salons. So that was a big part of my life as far as my developmental time is, you know, working with Jerry. She pushed us big time to be creative, really super creative. Yeah. So it was really a great time. It was different. You know, it was when all the salons, we all worked together to create beautiful images, you know, with clothes, with hair, with makeup, with everything. And now it makes me sad because everybody rents and they're all on their own. You have to be self-motivated. Mm-hmm. There's not that collaboration. And I think that's missing. A lot of people don't work in salons anymore. I started there. I'm very grateful for there because I think that it taught me a lot. And it also taught me a lot about different types of skins and complexions. You get so many people in there. It's like working at a counter. So you can learn how to do makeup on any skin color, any age group, any skin texture, any type of person. So it's really good education.
Yeah.
But the salon industry has changed. How is it in Germany?
Well, in Germany, it's interesting. So obviously, I'm an American here living, and I am a freelancer. So I did want to say, I think that because you were working in a salon, you might not have experienced the seasonality that freelancers experience.
That's why I didn't, yeah.
But still, there's still seasonality in that. So it's awesome that you were busy. That's a testament to you. But I think in Germany, just the beauty industry is totally different. There are definitely people who love makeup, right? And tend to wear a lot of makeup. Ooh. But then a lot of Germans are also really anti-makeup. They're very skeptical of what's in the ingredients and what's in them and how is it going to work. There is potential here. I think German women and men and the trans community especially, I think that they are starting to invest more in their image and how they look. This is also a question I didn't have written down, but you're also a mother and you're working full-time and busy and growing your makeup line and being a mom and a wife. I'm assuming you are a spouse. Some people don't like the term work-life balance. How did you get through that time? I have two small kids.
I get this question asked a lot, and I said I had no balance. I had none. My husband actually was the first Mr. Mom. My career really took off, and he just said, go with it. He was really supportive. You know, we just figured it out. I figured it out because I loved what I did so much that I just had to do it, and I was in demand. My services were in demand, so
yeah,
we just did it. And when I did the films, my husband at that point, he became the CEO of the company, Senna. So then he could do any hours, so he could be home. So he took care of the kids.
Yeah. You're doing this in a time when it wasn't normal.
It wasn't normal at that time.
For the male partner in a relationship to pick up the slack.
It's true. That was in the 80s when that started, more in the mid-80s. For me, when I had to travel a lot, that's when Miss Midler, she was so famous in the 80s. We did so many magazine covers, so many films, so many press junkets, so many traveling to Europe and Australia and all around. You know, I was gone a lot. I was gone a lot. Yeah. And then there was no cell phones. You couldn't even call home.
Yeah.
There was really no balance. I didn't see my kids a lot sometimes. Yeah.
Mind-blowing. This interview really is mind-blowing, and it was so good. Like I said before we started the episode, this is a two-part series, so you can go and check out the next episode if you're listening it on the air date, which is December 7th of 2020. It will be out on the 21st, okay? So mark your calendars. If you are listening to this after the fact, it doesn't matter. Just go ahead and go listen to it right now and take notes, because what she has to say in part two, namely the specific products makeup artists need in their kit and tips for how to achieve flawless makeup for mature women or men. But if you consider yourself mature or wise, she has some amazing tips. And if you see her, you would never think that she looks her age, and I'm not going to reveal her age. You can go make a determination for yourself. Anyways, make sure to tune in to part two and we will see you there. In the meantime, don't forget to subscribe, like, leave me a message. You can do that. And let me know what you want to hear more of. Head over to nataliesetteray.com/podcast and you can find all of the information there. See you next time. Stay beautiful.